Welcome to Preaching and Preachers, a weekly podcast devoted to those who preach and to the task of preaching itself. I'm your host, Jason Allen, president of Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary. Today I want to welcome Dr. Phil Newton to the podcast. Dr. Newton serves as senior pastor of Southwoods Baptist Church in Memphis, Tennessee, and has recently published the book, The Mentoring Church. He has previously authored the books, Elders in the Life of the Church and Conducting Gospel-Centered Funerals. Dr. Newton, welcome to Preaching and Preachers.
Thank you very much, Dr. Allen. It's good to be with you.
Yeah, it's a delight to have you on the podcast today. We're going to be talking about your new book, The Mentoring Church, and really fleshing out the topic, The Pastor and the Mentoring Church. But before we get into the heart of the conversation, perhaps a word about just your current ministry and what the Lord's doing at Southwoods Baptist Church in Memphis, and what's new in your life.
Well, I planted Southwoods a little over 30 years ago, so I've been in the same congregation for that length of time, which has given me a maybe a lot different perspective on ministry than I had in my early years of ministry. I've enjoyed the longevity. I've enjoyed seeing guys be raised up and go to the mission field and be involved in church planting and pastoring churches. So I'm in a very fascinating stage of life where I have grandkids, and some of my grandkids are in our congregation, so it's fun having them here. I'm enjoying ministry. I can honestly say at this stage in life, I'm enjoying ministry as much as I ever have.
Well, praise the Lord for that. That's an encouraging word to hear. And grateful your life and your ministry, 30 years, wow, what a tenure in one place. Man, praise God for that. That's such an example for younger pastors to just be faithful and press on and see the Lord bless over a protracted period of time.
Well,
go ahead.
Thankful for it.
So the Mentoring Church, I'm curious, the book itself, the need, the desire, the motivation to write the book, what was going on in the life of your church and perhaps your own heart that prompted you to draft the book?
Well, one of the things that prompted me years and years ago was early in ministry. I had a few individuals in the congregation where I was a member that really poured their lives into me. However, the pastor in my home church didn't. I've announced God's call to ministry, and he really offered virtually no encouragement at all. And that, I was new to all of this. I didn't know what pastors did, but he relegated my pastoral training to college and seminary. And then as I was a college student, I served in a church, and that particular pastor was very good to me, loved me, cared for me. But in terms of actual mentoring and ministry and preaching and pastoral counseling, he just didn't do that. But there was a group around me that I was discipling, and they ended up mentoring me without them realizing, in some way without me realizing it. I saw the stamp of their lives and their heart for the Lord really being reproduced in my own life. And so when I started pastoring my first church in 1978, it was rather daunting, because despite the fact that this was a church out in the boonies in southwest Mississippi, I realized how little I knew, and that my Master of Divinity degree did not necessarily qualify me to pastor that church. That I needed more. I need to understand about pastoral preaching. I really didn't. I needed to know, how do you lead the flock? And I really didn't. So that started a long process. Over the years, the Lord has brought so many people into my life that have given me encouragement, given me counsel. Reading some of the old guys has been helpful to me as well, to encourage me. And then early in our church ministry, there was a young man that came to our church about within a few months after we planted, and he was going into ministry, and so mentoring just kind of fell into my lap, and so I started mentoring him, in an unofficial capacity, then at a point in an official capacity, and he's serving on the mission field or continuing to serve today. And that's just become a part of the fabric of my life in ministry since that time.
You know, I love how you frame this through your personal biography and what you received and didn't receive and the different kind of junctures where people were involved in your life, either you on the giving or receiving it of mentorship, and the Lord using that to pique your commitment to mentoring. I guess I just want to reflect for a moment with you. I see in this generation, and by this generation, I mean the 20-somethings that are on my campus and I bump into and the church in different places. I see both a need for mentorship, and I don't mean that in a pejorative way or a critical way, but I do see a need because so many of the young men, especially aspiring to the pastorate, so many of them come out of broken homes. So many of them were converted in college. So many of them come out of churches that were not healthy. And so there's a need there. But also, I see an appetite in them, meaning many of the young men, especially, again, we're talking about here, who are inclined towards ministry, called towards local church ministry, they perceive that need. They have the appetite. They're wanting that mentorship. And they come to people like me and Midwestern Seminary. They bump into pastors like yourself, and they're asking for that. And I'm just curious, do you share that observation on both the need and the appetite side of things?
Very much so. As a matter of fact, just this week, it's kind of funny. We've added a couple more guys to our, we call it pastoral internship. In a lot of ways, it's the pastor mentoring and discipling young men, some of whom will go into formal ministry, some who may serve as leaders or elders in our congregation or maybe in another congregation. You know, all of whom will be highly involved in our congregation. So just this week, we've added a couple more guys, and I've never had to beg a guy to join me in a mentoring relationship. It's always, yes, I'll be glad to. So there's certainly an eagerness with this generation, and that's one thing that's thrilling for me because it gives me great encouragement that these guys are teachable. And they really want to learn. They want to be effective pastors and elders and missionaries and leaders in their churches.
You know, it strikes me in the course of this conversation to just add a word here that as seminary president, I don't see these church-based mentor groups and even the more intentional, more formal kind of church-based training centers. I don't see that as a competition at all or a threat to our work here. I see it as a compliment to our work. And not to digress into a seminary advertisement here, but we have many partnerships with local churches that have formal training centers, and we can partner with them, and whether it's facilitating online coursework with them or something even more hands-on under the supervision of the pastor leading there. And as we talk, Phil, I just reminded that so many listening to this conversation, they are pastoring, they're engaged in local church ministry, they're seminary students. And so, again, the topic of mentoring, the need to be a mentoring church, the ambition to be a mentoring church is relevant. The thesis for your book, I believe I found it on page 16, you say something, and I'm going to paraphrase here, but you say, in essence, the most effective mentoring teams within churches, pastors, and congregations, they help to shape those who will serve Christ's church. Flesh that out for us a touch.
Okay. I can meet with a guy and mentor him. I've been around as a believer for many years in ministry, so I can meet with a guy. As a matter of fact, I had a guy several years ago, met for lunch. He's a member of a large church in our community. And so somewhere in the conversation, he said, I wanted to see if you'd mentor me. And I just said, no. And he was stunned. And I said, I'm not trying to be ugly or anything like that. I said, I'll be glad to meet you and talk with you, but you need to be mentored by someone in your local church so that what you're being taught and trained in, you'll see fleshed out in people's lives. So when I'm involved in mentoring our guys and we talk about different aspects of pastoral work or we talk about application in pastoral preaching, they see very vivid, real-life issues all around them. They're involved in the lives of the people in the congregation. Just as another illustration of this, quite a few years ago, we had a young man that did a summer internship with us, and he was very bright. He could speed read through a book. He read Lloyd Jones' Preaching and Preachers in a day. So, you know, this kid could really, I say kid, he was a young man. He could really read fast and all that. And you know, very smart, but he did not want to really be involved in the congregation. And at the end of the summer, I had to just be blunt with him and say, you know, on behalf of the elders, we don't see any pastoral gifts in you because you've withdrawn. Instead of being involved in the congregation, you've not allowed the congregation to have input into your life. And we don't think you would be best serving Christ Church by trying to be a pastor in the local church because you don't seem to have a heart for the people. And that's where I want to see the guys in our congregation develop that kind of passion for the people. And the only way they're going to get it is to be plopped down right in the middle of people of all ages being involved in the work of ministry. Some of our guys are teaching classes regularly. All of them are involved in at least filling in or preaching, and they'll visit with people in need. They'll meet in small groups. They'll be discipling others. And so as they're fleshing out what it is to be a disciple and what it is to be a pastor of others, as they're fleshing it out within our congregation, then that gives us a chance to observe them. It gives them a safety net so that if they're getting a little out of line in their doctrine or a little out of line in their practice, they're not going to be kicked out or anything like that. We're there to put our arm around them and help shape them along the way. And it's all taking place within the sphere and the relationships of the congregation.
Yeah, and I love how you connect the work of the pastor with the congregation corporate in the task of mentoring. Before we get into the mechanics of that, I want to back up. You reference different figures of church history in your book, like Calvin, Spurgeon, Bonhoeffer. Give us an anecdote or two. Help us to learn from their examples.
Well, one of the things that Calvin did and Ulrich Zwingli did, they both had pastor schools, we'll call them. They eventually became universities in Geneva and in Zurich. But they started out to train pastors, and Calvin saw and Zwingli saw that these guys needed a place where they could learn biblical languages and they could learn theology and they could learn preaching. So one of the fascinating things was, you know, how does a young man preparing for ministry step into Calvin's pulpit or step into Zwingli's pulpit? Well, what these reformers did, they set up, in Calvin's case, a Friday afternoon preaching time. And so members of the congregation and guys who were pastors met with these men, and they would preach sermons, and then they would have a chance to critique them and to pour into their lives. And many of these guys were sent into France and other places. Many of them were martyrs for the faith as they were sent out doing mission work, but they learned within the sphere of the congregation. So I think that's one thing. Calvin saw that these guys needed to be mentored in preaching instead of just learning theology and learning hermeneutics and learning homiletics. They needed to have the actual practice. Another, and of course, you're more familiar than I am with Spurgeon, sitting right there in the Spurgeon library and seeing all this, but Spurgeon did this all the time. And one of the interesting things is he would gather the students around the tree in his backyard, the oak tree, and they would talk and they would laugh and they would field questions, and he would talk to them about real life ministry issues, and they would respond to questions that Spurgeon posed. And in that give and take relationship, same kind of thing that Jesus did with his disciples, they were learning about pastoral application. They were learning about the pastor's home life. They were learning about the mechanics of preaching. They were learning about how you deal with difficulties and sorrows. And they were learning that with someone who was doing it, and they were seeing that fleshed out in their lives. So historically, we have marvelous examples, and that was, I must say, that was fun researching those old brothers and how they did their work, and letting that affect my own life.
Yeah, and of course, you see, what I would just refer to as a ministry of proximity, whether it's Spurgeon, Calvin, letting young men especially into their lives and around them, and then intentionally, as you referenced, creating context for them to preach and for this gifting to begin to be exercised and fleshed out and spoken into, is a model worthy of emulation. So let's say in this conversation today, Phil, we have pastors listening, we have church members listening, and they're kind of tracking with us here. Make the case, and I'll use the word in quotation marks, selfishly, why it's in the best interest of the pastor and the local church to be intentional about mentoring. And I'm going to let you make the case, and I may add a personal follow-up word as well.
Sure. Well, one of the things is, as a pastor, I have a responsibility to be training men up. I have a responsibility to be observant. Are there some young Timothys and Tituses and others in my congregation? It was quite obvious in Acts 16 that Timothy's church and even a neighboring church had observed gifts in his life so that they could recommend him to Paul, and Paul took him in the second missionary journey. I think that's the kind of thing that we have to do, is are there young men that are really showing potential gifts for ministry? Are they potential elders in your church? Are they potential teachers? Then it may be that all of them will not end up being sent out to go pastor somewhere or be a missionary somewhere. But if you train up the leaders in your church and you're pouring your life into them within the context of your congregation, they're learning ministry, and you are ensuring by the grace of God, that the next generation, after you're gone, will continue on in faithfulness. You've laid groundwork. You've taught them the word. And you know, part of the way I look at it, if I drop dead tomorrow, I think our church ministry would just keep rocking right along, because there are guys all around us that I've had the opportunity, and some of my fellow elders have had the opportunity to mentor, and so we're not just looking at the present, we're also training for the future. And so many churches, the pastor wants to control everything, and he's the main guy, he's doing everything, he's going to kill himself. He needs to involve other men, and let those other men share in ministry. Let there be a true plurality in ministry. As he does that, then he is ensuring the time comes that he's gone, whether by illness or death or maybe a call to another congregation, then he has laid groundwork for that church to go on with good stability and leadership. That's just one aspect of this, and I think we could probably look at other prongs along the way.
Hey, Phil, let's pause just for a moment for a word of update from Midwestern Seminary.
Midwestern Seminary is pleased to announce the Sword and Trowel Bookstore is open for business online. Sword and Trowel is Midwestern's official store for books, gifts, and all those in demand for the church state t-shirts. Visit Sword and Trowel on Midwestern's campus in Kansas City or online at mbts.edu/store to find the latest in Midwestern and for the church gear, a treasure trove of Christian books, including those from Midwestern Seminary authors, and lots of great gifts and accessories for your home, office, or library. Sword and Trowel Bookstore. Visit them online at mbts.edu/store.
All right, we're back now talking with Phil Newton about his new book, The Mentoring Church, and the topic, The Pastor and the Mentoring Church. You know, as one who served in pastoral ministry for a little over a decade between pastorates and interim pastorates and staff ministry roles before coming here. I've just seen this play out practically in the life of local church, and personally I've seen the benefits of it. It hasn't been some big pragmatic calculation on my part, but I have been aware of the fact that, look, a rising tide raises all ships. And in a church, if a congregation buys into raising up young men for ministry especially, investing in them, being intentional about them, then you wake up one day and they're teaching Sunday school classes, they're leading outreach events, they're doing hospital visits, and it begins to, just a trickle-down effect takes place within the congregation, and the whole church becomes healthier and more ministerially robust, more ministerially fruitful. So let's say this. We have just a few minutes left here. For those listening that are, you know, they're taking the bait, they're believing what you're saying, they're wanting to incorporate this more intentionally into the life of their church, what practical advice would you give? How would you encourage those listening to become more of a mentoring church?
Well, one, don't worry about having to start some massive program. Start small. And if that's meeting with a couple of guys and working through a book of the Bible and talking about hermeneutics, teaching hermeneutics, and then helping them, giving them assignments to work on interpretation, and then tweaking and correcting their interpretations, and pointing them to good resources, and then working through homiletically. One of the things that's helped us is I've given assignments to our pastoral interns, and I'd say, okay, I want you to do 9 or 10 expository sermons through Philippians or through 1 Thessalonians, and I want you to do annotated outlines and list it out and talk about that. So these guys would do things like that, and then we begin to work through. And I use that as a time, not just for them getting the pulpit, but also, what do you do if you're teaching a class, a Sunday school class? How are you making application? How are you really correctly interpreting the word and making good application? So start small like that. Work through it. Read good books together and discuss those books. Read biographies and discuss those biographies. There are so many things that you can do that will end up being fruitful for those guys and for the congregation.
Well said. Dr. Newton, time has flown by here. I can't believe we've come to the end of our time allotment for this podcast. But I want to thank you for your book. Again, the name of it is The Mentoring Church, How Pastors and Congregations Cultivate Leaders. It's out by Kriegel. I want to commend the book and encourage those listening to get it. And I just want to thank you for the conversation today. Wow, 30 years of ministry in one place, 30 years serving the same congregation. What a milestone to surpass. And this book, in many ways, is the fruit of that 30 years. And I pray the Lord will give your book a wide reading and will give you many more years of serving the good people at Southwoods Baptist Church. Thank you for being with us on Preaching and Preachers.
Thank you, Dr. Allen. And I'm thankful for the work at Midwestern. I pray for you, brothers, and rejoice in the good work going on.
God bless you. Thank you for being with us.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Preaching and Preachers. For more information, please visit my website, jasonkallen.com.